Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
I said on the podium, you can go ahead and cancel the playoffs, so I'm not changing my mind.
Thank you, Mackenzie Milton. Wow. Welcome to 2018 Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine. HailVarsity.com presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, 80s action star Colton Stone. He's not wearing sleeves today because it's in the 20s, at least in eastern Nebraska. Hope you're doing all right. You know, it's going to be a gut check year when you put on pants for the first time in 4 days. Not lounge pants or fat pants, and the waistline's killing ya. You got to start exercising. Welcome to it. Can tap the line. Schilling Bridge Cork and Tap House lets you do that. 466-3776. 466-3776. 1-800-825-5865. Ton of college football to talk about. Central Florida Coach Frost reaction to that magnificent win over Auburn, the Rose Bowl, and Oklahoma. Man, just pulling. Something was hurting me there. Just OU not being able to finish while Central Florida able to finish. We'll do a little compare and contrast with Frost v. Lincoln Riley, two of the hot young coaches. Mitch Sherman going to be with us in about 15 minutes. We'll run down Mr. Blackshirt, Charlie McBride. It's a Tuesday with Charlie because we were watching bowl games and eating Chex Mix yesterday. Brandon Vogel of HailVarsity.com at 525, who was in Atlanta yesterday covering and checking things out for Hail Varsity and watching Central Florida go unbeaten. Some thoughts on Frost and the win coming up. Some thoughts on the outrage, or are you really outraged when it comes to the college football playoff? I know it's been beaten to the ground here since early this morning or late last night with the college football playoff, and is it time to expand? All of that, I have some thoughts on that. But let's hear from Scott Frost in his post-game cut three here on the selection committee, where Central Florida is at, and were they kept out of the party because, well, you were afraid as the selection committee.
Going through the season, I was afraid to say much about the rankings and everything because I'm a little superstitious, and just when a coach starts running his mouth, that's when you lose the next game. It wasn't right. I was watching every week the committee sit in a room and decide this two-loss team must be better than UCF because UCF's in the American, or this three-loss team must be better than UCF. It looked like a conscious effort to me to make sure that they didn't have a problem if they put us too high and a couple teams ahead of us lost that, oh no, now we got to put them in the playoff. But we just beat a team that beat two playoff teams and lost to another one by 6 points, and we beat them by seven. And Auburn's a great team. I'm not taking anything away from them. I give them a ton of credit. These guys deserve everything they get, and they deserve more credit from the committee than what they got.
Scott Frost right there, and I agree with him on what they just did yesterday, who they beat, how they did it, and the magnitude of really who they took down. That's unique. It's the most unique Power 5 season and win since we've had this Power 5, Group of 5 discussion. The little guy, the underdog, Cinderella. Listen, you had some instances where it's happened before. Utah beat Alabama 1 year. All right, this is probably 10, 12 years ago. Boise and Peterson and the Statue of Liberty against a three-loss Oklahoma team, similar to the three-loss Auburn team. TCU and the Red Rifle beating a Wisconsin team in the Rose Bowl back in 2010. And at the time, TCU's proven to making the jump from the Mountain to the Big 12. They've tied for a Big 12 championship. Utah's been pretty good in the Pac-12. Boise's stayed in purgatory because they're still in the Mountain West, and they'll get some non-con games against some Pac-12 teams, but the margin for error and the requirement for the group of five teams is insane. And the closest thing you'll ever have to a true invite to this party at Heff's Mansion was Houston. This is after they beat Florida State and went 13-1. They beat Oklahoma to start the year. This is 2 years ago. This is Herman's final year. They also had a showdown with Lamar Jackson, his Heisman-winning season, and he ended up with a Houston team going 9-3. Had they won out, they would have gotten in, I think, because of past work and what was on their schedule. Are you outraged? Did Central Florida get hosed, in your opinion? Or are you a Nebraska fan or Central Florida fan that is emotionally tied into your guy? Scott Frost has come to Lincoln. And I think the outrage is there. A year from now, you're not going to care. You're not going to care if Central Florida is knocking on the door. You're not going to care about Boise State. You're not going to care about Houston. You're not going to care about Memphis. You just won't. And the problem you have is if you're a group of five team, you're not going to get scheduled. You're not going to get scheduled. You just won't. There's too much to risk if you're a Power Five losing to them in the non-conference. Why mess with it? Not going to do it. You can't tell me that Bob Stoops losing to Houston helped him keep his gig longer at Oklahoma. Or did the rumbling start up? Well, maybe it's time for a change and let's go get this Lincoln Riley guy before he leaves. You know what I mean? You're not going to get the schedule. It needs to be a perfect storm. And that's also what you've had with Central Florida. You had a team that went and smoked Maryland, who beat Texas. Maryland, by the way, finishes 4-8. You have a team that is sexy and fun to watch on offense. And then you had a showcase where the team went in, beat Auburn, who is 2-0 against, or should say 2-1, against the teams that will be playing Monday night for the national championship. Beat that team in a road game and did it stylistically, emphatically, aggressively, with some awesome defense and a lot of flair to go undefeated while you're juggling two jobs. That's what's remarkable. Central Florida is a team that by beating Auburn, if you're going to look at common opponents and you're going to look at the situation, could you make an argument for this year's Central Florida team that they could hang with Ohio State, who also got left out? Could they hang with Oklahoma? Could they hang with Georgia? Could they hang with Alabama? Could they hang with Clemson? My initial reaction is no, but I've got to stop and rethink that because of what they did to Auburn. And based on what Auburn's done, you know, translation being, you look at some common opponents, you look at what Memphis did against Iowa State, who Iowa State beat. I mean, there's all of that. It's the what-if game we're playing. So overall, do I want to expand the college football playoff? I like it at four. If you go to six with five conference championships and give me a wild card, Notre Dame or somebody else, I'm okay with that. I just don't want college football turning in to what the NCAA regular season is now for basketball. You don't care or pick up. You do locally if Nebraska gets hot or whatever. But for the most part, it's wake me up when March gets here for college basketball. Part of that's the one and done, and you're not tied to teams like the Fab Five, but you get my point. It's watered down. The regular season is important to get that 20th win and finish in the top half of your basketball conference. From a college football standpoint, you're already maxing out in some instances at 15 games. Teams aren't going to want to get rid of home games because that's a paycheck. And are you going to penalize teams for not winning their conference championship? That's what you got to really ask yourself. Do you want the conference champs in? Yes. Do you want a team like Notre Dame, or in this instance, a team you believe in Central Florida that could hang? And it's not in stone or in ink. Next year's Power Five next year's Group of Five team will be lucky to be half as good as this Central Florida team with the quarterback, with the offense, and with the defense and the defensive turnover margin. So do you want change forever based on an outlier in Central Florida? They should have got a chance because they are good. and they capped it off the right way in incredible circumstances. That's what makes them different than a lot of the other non-Power 5 teams that got their shot in the big game. The other thing that needs to happen and has happened for these previous group of five teams, they've gotten the knock and the call up to the bigs to a Power 5. Central Florida, Memphis, Houston ignored a year ago. Last summer, the Big 12 was thinking about expanding, and they did not. And where will Central Florida be? I don't know. So do you want a playoff expansion? Are you over it? Are you going to think about it beyond Thursday of this week because of who we're talking about in Scott Frost and his team? My thought, you're not going to worry anymore about it. You're going to worry about who Scott's going to recruit. You're going to worry about how Nebraska does. You're going to worry about the spring game. Plenty more to get into. We'll talk about Nick Gates heading off to the NFL. Oklahoma and Georgia, and Lincoln Riley v. Scott Frost. Now, Scott Frost, you heard the comment here to start the show off about kind of being left out. And it was on purpose. Well, director of the college football playoff, Bill Hancock, stood behind the selection committee's reasoning. Listen, and this is quoting Hancock to Heather Dinich today. The selection committee respected Central Florida. After all, they're the group that put the Knights in the Peach Bowl. To qualify for the playoff, teams need to play tough schedules against good teams. This is the way it is for all teams to stand out and be highly ranked by the committee. Central Florida is an excellent team, but you still have to take into account who each team played and defeated during the regular season. I agree with that. And if you're Central Florida, you can only play who you can play, and you're in the conference that you're in. And they've done the most with what they can do. And the better they do, the less likely they're going to get scheduled. Maryland probably doesn't want them on their schedule. ACC's probably not going to be calling Central Florida, or they wouldn't have been calling Central Florida with Scott Frost down there. And the last part of this, too, is if Scott Frost and Central Florida are in the playoff, if they get in, or you expand it to six, do you get Frosty to come back? Because your ceiling was a little lower at Central Florida because you're ranked 12th going undefeated. Are they going to finish top five? I don't know. Will they be top eight? Likely. But where's that line in the sand for them? And there is truth to the level of opponent you're playing week in, week out. Now, again, what makes Central Florida unique and maybe strengthens their argument to get a better look than past non-Power Fives is the fact that because of the hurricane, they did it for 11 straight weeks, no break. And the way they had to close after X number of weeks consecutively, who do you got to close with? Well, let's look at their schedule. Well, the coaching carousel that was swirling since Temple week. You have to go play Memphis a second time. Before that, you got to outlast Central South Florida. It's a damn good team. And then you got to finish against Auburn while you're recruiting for Nebraska and game planning for Auburn, and then go play Auburn in their backyard. Incredible. Those are the factors that I think in this instance, you can take into account to make an argument for Central Florida. But not every non-Power 5 is going to be Central Florida. This is your Haley's Comet, man. It is. We'll talk more about Frost and the win. More from Hancock on Frost and his response to Frost's comment about the conscious effort with the 13-team selection committee to keep the Knights out of its final top 10. Listen, Central Florida was disrespected and dishonored by the selection committee by keeping them 12 and by moving teams up that had 2 to 3 losses. The selection committee was covering their backside. The selection committee did this. What's going to get us the best ratings? What's going to put us in position to at least have on paper good enough matchups for people to tune into? What's more likely to have a blowout if we let the non-contender in this one time and it turns into a blowout that everyone's upset at this because no one's watching. Well, how many of you tuned out for Clemson-Bama? Not tuned in, eventually tuned out for the the three-peat, the trilogy. I think it was boring and bad. And Clemson looked un-Clemson-like for the first time in 2 years. Bama was ready to go. They were rock solid. More from Hancock, and Mitch Sherman will have some thoughts on this. Frost thinks that there was some collusion to keep them out. I just don't think there was enough faith in Central Florida because of their lack of strength of schedule. And when it comes to Central Florida and things out of their control, i.e. a hurricane, i.e. not being able to get Georgia Tech, maybe that extra game against Georgia Tech would have helped, but I don't know if it would have got them any higher than 8. So did Central Florida get hosed? Do you want an expansion? Or do you say shut up about it? Central Florida's going to go away. Frost and company's here. I think most of you lean towards, hey, it'd be cool to see Frost try and play for a national championship. Not going to happen at Central Florida. He's here. Let's move on. I think your outrage, if you have any, is because of who got left out, that being Scott Frost. Mitch Sherman's on the way. More from Scott Frost in the win yesterday and what you saw on display by Frost and how it translates to Lincoln. Great to have you in on a Tuesday. Hail Varsity continues.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Okay, officially for me, no Chex Mix for 15 days. I need to detox. Great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Welcome in with ESPN.com and magazine. Mitch Sherman at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, how are you?
I'm well, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. Did you?
Happy New Year.
You too, man. Did you indulge in an extra Chex Mix or did you stay away from it?
There was lots of other things I indulged in. So if you're using Chex Mix as an all-encompassing terms for overindulgence around the holidays, then yeah, that, I think I'm guilty.
Well, it's all right. And a lot of football to indulge in yesterday. Immediate reaction to what you saw with Central Florida v. Auburn.
Well, I thought Central Florida beat Auburn at Auburn's game. That was my thought as the game went on, was that in the later stages it was going to favor Auburn because they were playing more at Auburn's pace. So I was impressed, definitely would have been impressed no matter how Central Florida won that game if it had found a way to dominate the tempo and won the way that it was used to playing football. Then of course that's impressive, but maybe even more so to be pulled into the game that Auburn wanted to play. Central Florida had problems with tempo in the first half because Mackenzie Milton couldn't find his accuracy and still took a lead at the half. And then when UCF did start to get some tempo going in the second half, it was impressive to see that the defense was able to keep up. A lot of times in those situations, and I think you saw it with Oklahoma last night, the defense can be victimized somewhat by the fast-moving offense, and I think that's something that Nebraska is going to have to take into account in the Scott Frost era, is finding the right kind of players on defense who can play alongside the offense that they're going to build, and they've done that in a short time at UCF. They've got guys who thrive in a fast game and can do it in a slower game too, like we saw at times yesterday. So just overall, really impressed with the job that they did in matching up with Auburn, and of course in the work of the coaches to get those guys prepared while each one of them was going through a job change.
That's what's extremely impressive. It's always impressive to beat Auburn or an SEC team in Atlanta, but just how locked in the defense was, and I'll get into this in a little bit, but I look at how Oklahoma went out, and they played kind of not to lose, you could argue, in the fourth quarter and in overtime and in the second overtime. Central Florida kind of stuck to their guns with staying aggressive. And I think that confidence and just being sure of yourself really showed through. Meanwhile, you look at Riley and OU, I think they overthought or got a little too cute. Do you agree with either of those observations?
Yeah, I think it's a good observation. And, you know, Lincoln Riley's a first-year head coach, and he's 8 or 9 years younger than Scott Frost. And I don't want to put it all on Scott Frost because he gets a lot of credit and deserves a lot of credit, and he's the National Coach of the Year, according to most, for a reason. And Lincoln Riley's had a great year, too. So it's not like a stark contrast there, but I think you can probably surmise that what you saw yesterday, not just yesterday, but in the lead up to that game, and then definitely out there on the field and the way that Central Florida handled itself in all moments of the game, but the fourth quarter was big because they did have a lead and they did continue to push the tempo and they did continue to play the way that they have been taught to play, and they didn't get happy with the lead or you know, get indecisive with what they wanted to do in play calling. You know, I think you can attribute that to some of Scott Frost's experiences over the years. I mean, clearly OU had an edge in quarterback play. As good as Mackenzie Milton is, Baker Mayfield had a better year and is probably a better quarterback, I would say, without offending too many people. So credit Scott Frost for everything that he's been through in his career and all of the guys that he studied under. I think those are the moments right there where that kind of stuff shines through, where he leans on the experience that he's had and the minds that he's been around in the game. There's a lot of talk about that, and it seems that everybody who wants to talk about Scott Frost will run off the list of coaches who he's studied under. And moments like that, I think, make it, that's when it really is apparent and valuable in his arsenal.
Mitch, Central Florida, the discussion, and Frost said it after when it comes to being a part of the playoff, and he was frustrated that things didn't go their way with the selection committee. Today on ESPN.com, you had Mr. Hancock say, look, there was no plot to keep them out. It came down to strength of schedule. How do you feel, again, the what-if game, Central Florida could have stacked up to the four teams that made the playoff compared to some of the past group of five squads? And I'm talking, you know, TCU pre-Big 12, Utah pre-Pac-12, Boise, and, of course, Utah with Urban in 04 when they played Pitt. Is this Central Florida team a different group of five team that could have made some more noise?
Yeah, I think those teams were all capable. I mean, as you went over that list, you know, you remember those TCU teams pre-Big 12 and the Boise team that beat Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl. Yeah, I think Central Florida is on par with those. I wouldn't go so far as to say that UCF has shown me anything to make me believe that they are a step above Boise and TCU and Urban Meyer's Utah team from 04 when he stayed and coached like Scott Frost did before going to Florida. I think they all belong in a certain category. I think all of them in a one-game situation like we saw yesterday can hold up just fine against the best in the Power Five. You know, I think there's a reason that none of them played for the national championship, and that's just the system that we have. You know, I take issue a little bit with some of what Hancock said. I don't think that there was a great plot on the part of the committee to downgrade Central Florida, you know, because it was a group of five program. But I think if this had been an eight team playoff, and if you had the five conference champs that got automatic bids plus three at-larges, and it could be a group of five as one of those at-larges if it's an undefeated team, they would be eligible, let's say. I think you would have seen UCF at number eight in the rankings this year, not at number 12 at the end. So what that tells me is there was an effort by the committee to keep them to keep them down to a certain degree. Now, I don't think it was malicious. I don't think it was a conspiracy. But I think the committee didn't want to find itself in a spot if they had raised Central Florida to perhaps where it deserved to be in mid and late November, where if all chaos ensued on championship weekend or Thanksgiving weekend, that all of a sudden you're looking at a situation where you almost have to put them in the top four. And that's kind of what Scott Frost suggested yesterday, and I think that there's legitimate reason to believe that. And the reason I will say that is because, as I mentioned, if this had been an 8-team playoff, and Central Florida was eligible for it, which, of course, they would be. They were eligible for the 4-team playoff. I think you would have found them at number 8. And I challenge the committee members, not literally, but I would challenge the committee members or Bill Hancock to say, no, UCF would not have been deserving of a spot in an 8-team playoff this year. I truly think they would have been, and I think they would have been at number 8. So with that in mind, it's difficult to justify their spot at 12 in the final rankings without thinking that there was something at work in the committee's minds to keep them out of a strange situation that could have vaulted them to number 4 toward the end.
Mitch, you got about 3 minutes here. Is the lack of buy-in with Central Florida because of that strength of schedule component? When you look at some of the teams that were ahead of Central Florida, they had multiple losses, but it was the grind and gruel of a Power 5 schedule, non-con and in conference. Is it just the bottom line of not wanting to reward a non-Power 5 that plays a lighter schedule?
Yeah, I mean, if UCF had played the kind of schedule that Houston played a year ago, where they had Oklahoma and Louisville out of conference, you know, UCF was hurt by that Georgia Tech game getting canceled because of Hurricane Irma. I think the committee would have been more apt to look fondly upon them in early November. I mean, it was apparent after the second release of the rankings, when UCF stayed at, I believe it was 17, and schools with 2 and 3 losses started to jump them, that it just wasn't going to happen. There wasn't any scenario that could unfold that would allow Central Florida to get anywhere close to the top four. So, and that's fine. I mean, I think that's the world. That's what the committee has decided. I mean, the committee looked at Central Florida's schedule and said, this is not a team that we think can work its way into the top four. So they didn't consider them for the top four really at any point in the process. So it's, again, as I said, that's just what it is. I think that Central Florida helped future Group of Five teams yesterday. They gave the committee something to think about. Look, if there's another team out there that's undefeated, maybe a team that plays a better out-of-conference schedule than what UCF did this year, and rolls that competition and then runs the table in the league, the committee might look differently in November at that team as a prospect for a 4-team playoff because of what Scott Frost and his guys did yesterday.
Mitch, about 45 seconds. What's coming up from you on ESPN.com?
Well, it's tracking all kinds of January stuff. You know, we'll be looking ahead to starting to look ahead to next year. Got the NCAA convention coming up in Indianapolis that I'll be at in a week or so. And looking forward to that Monday night SEC championship time part 2.
10 seconds. Do you have a lean Bama or Georgia?
Well, from what I saw yesterday, Bama looked like the best team in the country. Yep. So I picked them to lose to Clemson. I picked them to be out of the playoffs, so they might as well win the whole thing.
Mitch Sherman with us, ESPN.com and magazine at Mitch Sherman. Mitch, thanks for the time. Awesome stuff, bud.
Thanks, Chris.
Take care. Mitch Sherman with us. We'll spend a few minutes here on what just did happen for Central Florida and why it went down the way it went down. Coach McBride is coming up at 5. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris at HailVarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, action star Colton Stone, and you. Hope you're shaking off. It's so lethargic to get back at it after a New Year's Day bonanza of grub and football, but we're all trying. 466-377-6800-825-5865 can tap the line. Schillingbridge Court can tap house, lets you do that. Good stuff from Mitch Sherman on Central Florida. His thoughts on their performance, his takeaway when it comes to if they could hang with the other four teams that made the college football playoff. Let's switch gears from the expansion or leave it alone talk slash did Central Florida get hosed and get a little further into detail with what actually happened. Now, I don't know if you were a vicarious Central Florida fan yesterday with Frost and his staff doing their thing, if you were on the edge of your seat, if you were throwing stuff at the TV, if you had the pucker factor going when it got tight in that ball game. And I just watched and wanted to see how they'd react in the moment. And there's so many things that you want to have Scott Frost pack and bring with him to Lincoln, and you hope that he'll pack and bring with him to Lincoln. And first and foremost, it starts with just that confidence. What does Scott Frost have, and what did he and his staff show when things got tight? And I'm talking that third quarter when Auburn reels off a couple quick touchdowns, and it's 13 minutes and change, and you're now down. Things went horribly on offense for Central Florida. And they still found a way to get the lead. They still found a way to put a drive together to get a field goal. They still found a way to get a turnover and get seven off of that. They still found a way to hold Auburn to some field goals. And they did it by not overthinking and getting passive. They kept on coming with the play call and with the defensive pressure. The favorite whispering is the old prevent defense. It prevents you from stopping them. Well, you had a little bit of zone coverage by Central Florida in that fourth quarter, and they said, forget about it. We're going to finish this out with what got us here, and that is constant pressure. Six sacks on Auburn. Tackles for a loss. Letting Griffin get loose. And that's how they won. That's why they won. They kept going after it. They weren't afraid to fail. They played fast. And that is what you want brought with you and will be brought with you, that style, that belief, that culture, period. And what I liked, you didn't make every tackle if you're Central Florida. But, man, they came with some bad intentions, and they were aggressive. They were sound. It's been a long time since you've seen sound tackling. It is, and that's the difference in some of these big-time teams. Watching all the bowl games, you know what sticks out? Not only Penn State's offensive explosiveness that will be gone with Barkley there, not completely gone, but gone. But Penn State was fast and furious to the football. Ohio State, fast and furious to the football on defense. Getting pressure on the quarterback. You want to win in major college football, you stop the run, and you light up the other team's quarterback. You don't sit back and play afraid. And you have a no-fear factor coming to Lincoln with that mindset and belief from Central Florida. It's so key. We'll have Coach McBride talk about this and the game plan that Chenander put forth. But you had really great tackling. They were physical. And you had the effort and the passion and then that emphasis of playing fast. And then when it got to gut check time, what happened? Well, let's run some quarterback. Draw action. Let's use our mobility. If the kid's 3 of 17 to start the first half, what do you lean on? You lean on his legs and he runs for almost 90 yards. And he put the pressure on the defense with that quarterback and his ability to throw or run. And with the quarterback and with the offense doing their thing, and then the play action and the screen game, and then the seams, it just worked. And you weren't afraid. You weren't afraid on third and long to kind of let it all hang out. We can talk and pat them on the back because it worked, but they didn't change who they are. Oklahoma last night changed who they are. Now, credit Georgia defensively for, as Baker put it, started blitzing more on first and second down. But OU got too cute, overthought it, and freaked out. They got cute and they ran trick plays. They were afraid to run it on third and two. Their defense has been awful a long time under Mike Stoops. So you got to kind of protect them. I get it. But you protect them by not letting them back on the field, even though they got some stops late in that game. And they got the go-ahead touchdown after giving up 24 straight points. But that's just what you're getting right now. Bob Stoops would have gone for it on third down and two or fourth and one last night. Lincoln Riley overthought it, got worried about it, wasn't sure, and didn't want to be wrong. And then got cute with the play calling. Meanwhile, Scott Frost in the situation where you're having to respond to the momentum that's on Auburn's side, you go out and make the plays, and you let your quarterback make the plays. Triggered and executed by Milton. How many times was the ball out of Baker's hands? You're running some sprint options. You're getting good yards on first down where it's second and five, and you can't knock out a couple third and twos. You have this anointed boy wonder genius in Lincoln Riley, and I think he's a smart coach. I think he's a really good coach. I think Oklahoma's a really good football team. And that's the crime, is that they're not playing for the championship when you score 48 and lose. I mean, Georgia had 240 yards pre-contact last night against that Big 12 defense. Meanwhile, with Frost, when it got tight, he knew where he wanted to go. He knew what they were going to do. And he let his guy get comfortable and make the plays in that second half. And then he said, just go get after it if you're the defense. That's what's the difference right now in where you're at if you're an Oklahoma fan. You're heading back to Norman. What could have been? Man, we screwed that up. Man, we botched that. Man, we played afraid. And if you're a Nebraska fan and you're excited because Scott Frost and his staff pushed all the right buttons against Auburn, they executed, they won, and you have that faith, that experience, and that result moving forward. Wouldn't spend a second there on the two young coaches that have been circled this year, Riley and Frost. We'll wind down hour one. Great to be with you on a Tuesday. It's Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Crackpot Dynamite reporter from Auburn at the first press conference asked me how in the heck we're going to possibly throw the ball when they keep a lid on their covers, and who's the best pass rusher you've ever played against? Well, how are you going to stop number four? This is the best pass rusher our offense played against. This guy's unbelievable. And one hand, two hands, 1 foot, 2 feet. I don't care. I want him on my team, and whatever team drafts him can be lucky to have him.
Griffin was incredible to watch for Central Florida. Inspirational. And just a beast off the edge. Welcome back to Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Colton Stone. Colton, you told me something during the break, and I think you're right. Your de facto national championship game was Oklahoma v. Georgia. You're not going to top that game. The shootout, the points, the lack of tackling all the time, and then the offensive explosion, and the fact Georgia came back, and I have the numbers here when it comes to yards that Georgia ran for. It was nuts. Like 25 carries for 350 yards was incredible. It's flat out incredible. And you had OU up 21-7 Couldn't close the deal. Meanwhile, you look at the other side of the ball here, Central Florida, who hasn't played a team of Auburn's caliber all year. When the lights were on and it's bright and it's stage and it's that lump in your throat, they respond. This is a loss that will stick with Lincoln Riley and have fans and folks around college football question him for a while. It's going to be stapled to him until he wins a big game. Meanwhile, Scott Frost is a guy that's got all the accolades and coach of the years and he's done a great job, but this is a win, and how Central Florida finished kind of validates all the hype and hope and expectation for him because how he performed when it really got tight.
Well, and I the UCF game was incredible. That was awesome to watch, and the Oklahoma-Georgia game was awesome to watch. I said as soon as the playoff came out, I wasn't watching Alabama-Clemson, so I didn't.
Is it fatigue for both? Don't care.
The first time they played is like, okay. And then the repeat, it's like Clemson's a better team this year and they came so close.
Well, it must be straight. Watson's fun to watch.
Right. And then it's just like you don't want to watch it a third time. And I don't even know if I'll watch the national championship because I didn't want it to be two SEC teams.
Sure.
So that's why I was really intrigued by Oklahoma and Georgia.
You had this fear of a 21-10 slugfest versus the other end of the spectrum, an obscene 54-48,
right?
Tie ball game.
And that
you need a happy medium. It can't be Madden, but it can't be 1912 football either.
Right.
So let's just make everyone happy. 35-31. But it won't happen against you. It won't happen with.
And the overtime made it better.
Yeah, there's some drama to that.
The fumbles. Just everything was. You just were like hyped to watch it, and I just was not excited about Alabama Clemson for the third year in a row.
No, you have some different folks, and I just, as good as Bama is and how great their defense was, I'm just not wowed with Hurts. He's good, but he's kind of in that JT Barrett mold with me where there's a lot that can go wrong if homeboy's throwing the ball and he's not allowed to run. Don't go wrong when it comes to getting that designated driver. You drink, you drive, you lose. You get caught with a DWI. It can cost you $12,000 in fines and fees and jail time. And that interlock device, remember, you drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Department of Transportation and Highway Safety Office. Charlie McBride, up next with Hail Varsity Radio.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you back. Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Colton Stone, producing and engineering today. Brandon Vogel. I'm not sure if Vogues is still in Atlanta or not, but he was down there for the Peach Bowl. We welcome in Mr. Blackshirt, Charlie McBride, Mondays with Charlie. Coach kind enough to be with us every Monday a little bit after 5. It's Tuesday because we were watching football and smiling about Scott Frost and UCF yesterday. Coach, Happy New Year. How are you?
Happy New Year to you. And all the people back in Nebraska. I'm frozen.
Yeah, you're frozen. So are we. It's been, well, the temperatures have a minus next to a number, so it kind of looks like.
Oh, yeah, we got those.
Yeah, it looks like the rushing yards you guys allowed a number of teams, right? At least you can smile about that.
In double digits.
Right. Minus 14 right on the day. Hey, I got to ask you, what did you think of Central Florida, Scott Frost, and their win over Auburn?
I thought it was unbelievable. I mean, the thing that happens in those games is they came out and they were so stage fright, I think it was a little bit, you know, at the beginning of the game. And you could tell. I could tell watching them on TV. You know, the quarterback was nervous and throwing the ball in the ground, throwing it over their heads and all kinds of things. But you know he'd settle down. And I've seen him, you know, play before a little bit. And, you know, he's really pretty accurate. So I knew that he was you know, just trying too hard, I think, is what he was trying to do. And, you know, he can't do that. But overall, it was great. And that, you know, the thing is the division that, you know, you're in Division 1A and all that, but they never get the recognition of the schools that are, you know, not in the Power 5 or whatever they call it. And, you know, it's kind of tough on them as far as not any, you know, recognition except for something like that, that they get in. You know, they were ranked, I think, 12th, and they got, you know, they pulled a good football team. And I put it on them, too. I don't know if they were ready to play. I think they thought they were going to roll their hats on the field, maybe, and all of a sudden they figured out these guys are for real. And but I, you know, over the whole thing, I think it just serves a purpose that you can see 13-0 is amazing. I mean, I've been through that before, and you know, there's always some stumbling blocks along the side, and if you can beat those stumbling blocks, you're okay. But there always are some there, and those are the ones you have to, you know, really fight for. And of course, in every year that we won, we had one or two games during the year that we struggled. And but you know, I don't think he struggled as much. No one, and looking at the statistics of the year, it's pretty good. And you know, I think his offense is exciting. I think it's going to be, you know, a lot of different things. And I know that, you know, he's probably got more tricks up his sleeve than he had time to get ready for. So, you know, I don't know. But, you know, it's a crazy world when you get into that. And the thing that I like about Scott is his, you know, his loyalty. And that, you know, that word is kind of almost erased from coaching anymore. You know, everybody's looking for the buck. And I think that, you know, that's probably the way it is. So a lot of them will just leave you or bring, you know, take off on you for a few more dollars and stuff like that. And I always felt like, you know, it was part of our job to, you know, to be a loyal person to who you're working for, and the same way for the person you're working for being loyal to you. And you can see that on him. You can see that because of how he worked with those kids and how he did. And I'm just hoping that it does the same thing at Nebraska.
Charlie McBride's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Mondays with Charlie, a special New Year's Tuesday edition. Your thought on knowing when to play safe and knowing when to be aggressive. And I thought Coach Chenander and the way that Central Florida's defense forced the issue, the way they got after Auburn, the way they got after a big, bad SEC offensive line. They were aggressive. They stayed who they were. They were aggressive on offense even when it wasn't rolling, right? They still stuck with it. But they were that way on defense, and it was the difference. And there's that. Is there a fine line? Or, Coach, you always got to kind of be who you're going to be aggressiveness-wise.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. You know, I think that, you know, to me, if you don't pressure people, they're just going to eat you up. And you know, in some cases, you know, they just stick with the same thing all the time and the same deal. And the kids, in reality, the kids don't have any fun, you know. And I always thought, you know, by blitzing and having different kinds of blitzes, not necessarily in coverage, but up front, in the front seven guys, try to keep the coverage the same a lot of times. But that stuff has a lot to do with, you know, the game of football. And you could tell their pursuit. There was eight guys on, I think, on one tackle I counted, you know, that were either on the ground or standing there. And, you know, that's the way you play the game. And, I mean, you have to understand that it's your responsibility to get the ball for the offense. And that's just a must. You have to do that because, you know, defense is nothing more than a necessary evil. You know, people would, you know, if they didn't have to, they'd watch offense the whole day if they could, you know, in reality. But I think, you know, when you have a bunch of guys that are flying around and doing that kind of stuff, I think it, for the fans, I think everything, it just makes things that much better.
Coach McBride, with this system that's going to translate to Nebraska, and I don't expect you to know the full roster, but a lot of Nebraska fans excited about not only what Scott and his staff accomplished at Central Florida, but also the projection as to what he can bring with from Central Florida to Nebraska and be successful defensively. What's your hope and what's your feel on how Nebraska can be defensively with some of the puzzle pieces they already have?
Well, I think one of the things that did in the game was maybe I think some of the fans were just waiting to, with the defensive side of the ball, we're just waiting until they had something to complain about. They thought they were going to, and I got to the point where maybe he satisfied some people because, you're not going to win every game, but at least, if you play as hard as you can, I've always said, if you play as hard as you can, then the score will turn out the way it should be. And if you get beat and you play as hard as you can, you just got beat by a better team. There's nothing to be ashamed of about that. And because I think each individual has to, judge himself. Coaches think they can judge if a kid's playing hard all the time and this and that, but you really don't know what's inside. They may have more than you think they have. Mm-hmm. And I think they got a lot of that out. You could see they were responsible for each other. In other words, a lot of guys, you use the term love each other, and that's what they did. They just played, together as a team. The offense played for the defense, and the defense played for the offense, and that's what makes a team. You can't just have one side of the ball and these guys all hang out together and the other side of the hang out together. We never had that I can ever remember, anything like that. And I'm sure that Scott felt that when he was playing, and I felt that's one of the lessons he learned, as a player.
Coach, I want to switch gears and ask you about 20 years ago and today and what you were doing after the Orange Bowl win over Tennessee with the team or some of your coaches as you're waiting for that final coaches vote to find out if you won a national championship or not.
Well, everybody just stays up all night. And when you win, it's a lot easier because, the interesting thing is we spent most of our time around the halls talking to the parents and so on and so forth. I mean, got to know a lot of them that you probably didn't know before and things like that. And we just, kind of had an all-night party, really. it was, out in the hall and in the lobby, everybody's wandering around, waiting for that. But, it was really it was an exciting time, and you just don't know how it's going to come out. And, I think at the end, I think a lot of it, I think that there was a lot of responsibility in the coaches' poll, especially for Tom, knowing that it was his last year too. And I think that had a lot to do with it. But I would have put us against Michigan any minute, any time they want to go, because I live up here and hear a lot of that stuff. And so this year I'm having my fun. And, they finally got this guy to shut up here a little bit. And so, he was always doing something that was weird, and he's a different kind of cat. I mean, he really is. And, but, I think in waiting to see what happens and then to see when we found out, that we won the coaches' poll and everything, I think just to see the players, that they're the ones that do it, and, we've been coaching long enough to know that there's always another day, and, but those players, that's their day. They'll have that the rest of their lives.
Who's the first person you hugged?
Oh, probably my wife.
Yeah, good answer.
but I think it was probably some of the defensive linemen. That's usually what ends up happening. Are they, they'll migrate together to you or whatever it is. But, all of those guys that, that worked so hard to get there, You know, that's, you know, you never get to really get how much you appreciate what they did. You can say it all the time, but, you know, like as I get older, I look at it and just have so much more appreciation for them. And then, you know, like I got a call the other day from one of the players that wanted to know if everything was okay up here, if I needed some help and stuff like that. You know, that's, you know, they don't have to do that, but they do. And so, you know, those are the things that happen after the game's over and when everybody's done playing and settled down. And you've heard 100 times that it's the relationships you have in coaching is what, to me, was the money part of it.
Mm-hmm. Charlie McBride's with us. Hail Varsity Radio. Mondays with Charlie, a special January 2nd, Tuesday edition. Coach, I ran into a guy that loves you and respects you a ton. And I got a story told to me about a Harley in the press box from a guy named Moose.
The Moose Man.
The Moose Man. I got to spend New Year's Eve with him.
Oh, the guy's amazing. He was a linebacker for us, and it was he was leading the, I think he was leading the show on that Harley thing, you know. But he's a guy that wanted to coach and mm-hmm. just never could hook up good, you know, with mm-hmm. anything. And so he kept going to camp and he kept working in my group. We just kept working together, and pretty soon things opened up a little bit for him. And he got some, you know, he said one town he was in, he coached in, it was someplace in like southeast or northeast Oklahoma mm-hmm. somewhere. He said the highest priced house in town was $50,000. So, you know, and he said they had barbecues and they had the greatest time in the world. He said the fans came out, and, you know, so, you know, those are the things as you go up, you know, those are the things that, you know, that he started finding out. And of course he's got himself a pretty good job now at South Dakota South Dakota he's at. And you know, I think, you know, eventually he's going to get move up some more. And but it's a, you know, the coaching profession, I get letters and stuff or emails from guys, the families that I know, the family, and they have a son that wants to be a coach and things like, what does he do? And, mm-hmm. you know, and get in the thing, it's a hard deal. I mean, it really isn't, because most schools take care of their own. And that's the first thing. But now they have more GAs that are able to get in there. And sometimes you work yourself from a non-coach quality control type of guy to helping out. I think the graduate assistantships are now 3 or 4 years, maybe even you can stay. It was only 2 when we were there. Mm-hmm. And because I know we had Bill Kenny the first year when I was there. He came from the East Coast, and Bill left, and we didn't able to get him a job. And I think I called Joe Sarup at Penn State, and Joe said, tell him to stop by on his way home. So I said, well, if you want to be a GA again, well, he was there about 3 months, and they put him on the staff for 33, 34 years.
That's good.
You know, so that's, you know, you just hit a spot like that, and you're lucky, and, you know, you're in the right place at the right time.
Charlie McBride's with us, Mondays with Charlie. Coach, we'll get caught up with you next week and preview the national title game. Stay warm up there, and thanks for everything.
Good. Okay. Well, Happy New Year to everybody. And, you know, go, just be sure you wear your earmuffs out.
Earmuffs are key. Thanks, Coach. Take care.
Okay.
There he is.
Thank you.
Earmuffs. And Coach McBride, I like it. The legend is a Harley, the new Nebraska press box. And it was a Harley for Coach McBride from Coach Moose. Good stuff. Brandon Vogel's next.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio
on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Good stuff from Charlie McBride, a Monday turn Tuesday with Coach McBride. Great stuff on Shenander, the defense, and that national championship night. Waiting for the votes down in Miami. And even a thought on the Harley through the press box. I need to get him to expand on that one, but maybe not. Phenomenal coverage by HailVarsity.com on Central Florida's game versus Auburn. Brandon Vogel brought that to you. Brandon Vogel with us now on Hail Varsity Radio. At Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Vogues, Happy New Year, bud. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy New Year, Chris.
What do you walk away with from your experience covering the Central Florida team in the snippet you got and seeing that outcome and on that stage? I mean, you were there. It was a road game. It was Big Bad SEC. It was a clinic on preparation. It was incredible.
I was really impressed with the UCF turnout, considering that Auburn's about 70 miles from Atlanta. UCF fans definitely held up there in the deal in terms of filling up their half of the stadium. But the word that I think I used probably more than any other in writing about UCF in the lead up to the game and then afterwards was fun. You hear Frost mention it a lot. He kind of diagnosed that as one of the central problems or central things that was missing from that program when he showed up, and it's what they pursued. And it's really remarkable just sort of the supreme confidence that I think they displayed and how, I guess, the lack of complication. So what's it going to take to go out and beat Auburn? Well, for some teams, it's going to, you're going to have to scheme this and do that and avoid this. And for UCF, they seem to just kind of come out and say, well, it's just football. We're going to play our game and do what we do. We're going to go fast. We're going to have fun and all the other buzzwords. And then they did it. It's kind of remarkable, particularly when you look at it in the frame of what Nebraska football has felt like over the last 10 or 15 years.
You had a great story on that F word, man, that fun factor that Frost has. But it's real, and part of the button pushing that has to happen as a coach is the work that goes into the results. But I think what will have players excited at Nebraska, and the kids from Central Florida can attest to this, is getting that work done and making that work fun, that training fun. It's serious and it's important, but how do you go about doing your job to get that result you want?
Yeah, and it does seem like there's a lot of carryover in that regard from Frost's time at Oregon. It's an exciting brand of football. Guys like playing it. They like talking about it when you sort of build your entire image around the fact that, hey, we're gonna try to be the fastest team in the country. We're gonna play fast, and we're not gonna be afraid to make mistakes. And when we do, who cares? You know what? There's another play coming up right now. There was a couple of plays that I highlighted from that game. Where you would just run the ball. You could run the clock out at the end of the first half. No, UCF goes down and gets a field goal. Facing a 2nd and 10 late in the game, run the ball and keep the clock moving. No, they throw it to a tight end, a beautiful pass for 36-some yards. When you do that sort of stuff, it kind of indicates, it backs up all of the things that you've done to get to that point in terms of the work that you put in that, hey, we're not going to take this too seriously. Because we're going to try and do, we're going to be on the attack all the time. And it's just, it sticks with you. It's just a ton of fun sort of watch. And you can tell the players enjoy that approach.
Your thoughts and takeaways with Coach Frost, not only from the podium on Mercedes-Benz Field. Well, I don't know what's the field, but you get my point. The renamed Georgia Dome. And then the post-game media session with his thoughts on the playoff committee.
It was pretty interesting. I find it kind of hard to disagree with the notion that UCF was kind of kept it, in that 10, 12, 14 range to avoid any issues. You see them go out and do that to Auburn, a team that played 3 of the 4 teams in the playoff and beat 2 of them. It does make you wonder if there's a little bit of truth to that. And particularly with the way that game unfolded, it was very much to Auburn's liking. UCF had to be comfortable being uncomfortable a lot of the time, and they were. It looked like they had the best 2 players on the field in terms of Shaquem Griffin and Mackenzie Milton against an Auburn team that's stacked with NFL talent. So you know, I thought it was interesting. I thought it was a sort of well thought out and kind of cutting approach to it. You know, anyone can come out and say, hey, yeah, look at us. We're the only undefeated team. We deserve your national title votes. But to say, I wondered all along if they were kind of keeping us down to avoid even the difficult conversation that could arise was pretty savvy.
Where do you slot Central Florida? If Vogues has the final votes here, and let's just for argument's sake say Bama beats Georgia, flip-flop 1 and 2, okay? Where do you slot Central Florida? I think they're obviously better than 12. There's a major disrespect, and that's now validated with how they beat Auburn. But, and the question to me was, how do they stack up against the lines of scrimmage, the size, the disadvantage, right? And they're not doing it for consecutive weeks in the AAC. That's kind of their out of their control, but it is what it is. Where do they shake out in the top 10? Who could they beat? Who would they have a tougher time beating? Because they weren't supposed to beat Auburn, right? I mean, Vegas said no.
Yeah, I mean, in a one game playoff, which is all football is, you know, 13, 14, 15 times a year, I legitimately think they could beat anyone. You know, in that regard, if I were to rank them, they're in the top five for me, certainly. It becomes a matter of, do I put them 2, 3, 4, somewhere in that range? I'd probably put them at 3 behind the two teams that are playing next week in whatever order they finish. You know, the big question I had coming into this one, like you said, was how do they match up in the trenches against a team like Auburn? Well, they didn't give up many sacks to Auburn, and Auburn defense pass rush that was pretty fierce. And then you flip it around, their defensive line kind of dominated Auburn's offensive line. So if they're capable of doing that, I really do think they could beat any team in the country.
Just on a one-time shot, I think they could. And they're, to me, they're a different case study than even where you have the TCUs and Utahs and Boise's of the past, just because of how explosive and aggressive. I mean, that's, to me, the confidence and the preparation is, I mean, there wasn't any extra effort or more effort put in by Central Florida than some of these other non-Power Fives when they had their showcase. But what you did have is the response. And I look at that in comparison to, like, just how Oklahoma botched it last night. When it comes to stepping up and finishing out, how do you finish? And Central Florida did it so with so much poise, and I think that's impressive, and that's the lasting thing I take with me from the Central Florida team as to why, on a given night, they could hang.
Absolutely, you know, as I look back on it, I think one of the most telling quotes of the days leading up to that game may have come from Auburn defensive coordinator Kevin Steele. When he called them a resilient team, which I thought was a really interesting word at the time for a guy who's been around as much good football as he has. It almost read to me as kind of the highest compliment you could have. And what he was talking about was that sort of play-to-play short memory or whatever you want to call it. And that, yeah, you might have beat us on that play, but here comes another one. And if we win this one, here comes another one really quickly. So they just do a good job of resetting when they may have a negative play, and then keeping momentum going when they happen to win. It's pretty remarkable. And again, you know, just an enjoyable brand of football.
Brandon Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. He was in Atlanta yesterday for the Peach Bowl, and be sure to log on HailVarsity.com and read Vogue's thoughts on the win for Scott Frost, and can find him on Twitter at Brandon L. Vogel. Vogue's, before we say goodbye, got a couple minutes here. I haven't got to it yet. Been doing a lot of Central Florida, Auburn. Did Central Florida get hosed? You know, that type of discussion. Tell me about Nick Gates and his decision late last night to jump to the NFL. A, are you surprised? B, do you think it's the right move?
I was a little bit surprised, but I think when you look at the changes coming to Nebraska, you kind of got to be open to anything.
is it the right move? You know,
for, we'll see, right?
Yeah. You know, for him, if that's what he wants to do, if he doesn't want to sort of go through the change that's coming, that's totally fine. And you have to respect that decision because, you know, if he were to stay but still felt that way, that's probably not going to work out either. So, you know, he certainly has pretty good measurables and you wish the guy the best. So, yeah, if that's the decision he's making, then I'm going to say it's the right one.
Did you stick with Clemson, Bama last night, or did you float over to the Breaking Bad marathon?
What I did is fall asleep towards the end of the third quarter.
Did you fall asleep or did you pass out again? I'm kidding.
I was rushing home from Atlanta to see the second half, and by the time I got here, I sat down for most of the third quarter and then started to nod off. But luckily at that point, Bama had kind of built their final lead, so I guess I didn't miss anything.
You're not alone. Many probably nodded off with Clemson, Alabama. It's not you. It's not that you aren't devoted to football. Quite the contrary. Just a long, hard day. Amazing work, Vogues. We'll get caught up again later this week, perhaps, and for sure soon. But thanks for your coverage, and thanks for everything with Hail Varsity, man.
All right, take care.
See you, bud. There he is, Brandon Vogel with HailVarsity.com. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I did drift over to Walt and Jesse. That's, you know me by now. That's just what I do. Because you had a 13-second, was it a 13-second or a minute span? You had a couple of turnovers that just did in. Clemson. Okay. We'll spend some time on Nick Gates. We've reached out to Nick. We'll see if we can't get him on this week. Share his thoughts as he is off to the NFL. But I always enjoyed Nick. We'll see where he ends up in the NFL as he moves on. 466-377-6800. 825-5865. Can tap the line here with an open segment next.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Colton Stone. Hope you're doing okay. Thanks to Brandon Vogel, 80 years and counting. Things have been done the AgriGold way over the decades together. We've built a brand that's truly different. Different because of our knowledge, different because of our passion, different because we represent the voice of our customer. Our true partners, providing customers with the very best seed. Always backed by a handshake and a promise of more diversity, less risk, and greater yield. For more information, please visit AgriGold.com, 800-262-7333. Okay, this came down last night, saw it this morning. I spent more time on Frost and UCF and his style and his confidence and his poise coming to Nebraska. But Nick Gates, your left tackle, is off to the NFL. And Nick Gates is a very, very talented player. Nick Gates is a guy that was most comfortable at right tackle year one after a redshirt season. And that was his best year at Nebraska, playing right tackle. And moving from right tackle to left tackle, it took some getting used to. Wall injured, mind you. But I won't forget a couple of Nick Gates' performances. And it's not the Tennessee one. I mean, that's glaring. That's a year ago at this time that he had some trouble kind of getting past. But I remember him as a redshirt freshman against Shalik Calhoun at Michigan State, that incredible November night where Nebraska beat Sparty. I remember, I mean, you look at some NFL rosters, and you've got a number of kids from UCLA that played in the Foster Farms Bowl. And Nick Gates had a really solid night. Was Nick Gates a guy that was best fit in this Riley offense? He tried. Was Nick Gates a guy that was going to work in a Tim Beck offense with a zone read, shotgun run game, and a penchant for a gash big play? I think Nick Gates and the new offensive line coach, Greg Austin, would have been phenomenal together. Why? Just because I think Greg Austin's a guy who gets it. And he's also, you know, you talk about Frost's pedigree. Well, Greg Austin's worked under a number of dudes too. And I think Gates's athleticism is what's very special about him. But he made the decision to head on off to the NFL. And a good write-up here by Derek Peterson, Dr. Petey, when it comes to some responses and some quick thoughts on this. Listen, Gates is a guy that I think when push came to shove, he had to ask himself, am I in it right now? And the words of open competition, the words of no job is safe, I think it's very fair to say Nick Gates is one of your two best tackles on the team. Is Nick Gates a guy who wants to go earn a starting spot with a new coaching staff? Does he want to start all over again, or is it easy to move on? Maybe his whole Nebraska experience, he's ready to move on from it because the staff who recruited him wasn't here. He got paired with a different staff, tried to make the best of that, and now you have Frost and friends coming in, and there's no advantage slash seniority, and I don't think there should be based on coming off a 4-8 year. So if I'm the Gates, I look at it and say, screw it, man. Maybe it's easier for me to go be a drafted guy and work it that way. I think he's good enough and he'll be versatile enough. Not that I've seen him play guard, but body type, he's more of a guard than a tackle. I think it works out. Now, if you're Nebraska, what do you have? Well, you had Gates at the left side. You still have Foster on the left side. You can theoretically have Hymus go from right to left. And at the other tackle spot, you can have Farniok. Kristen Gaylord's been the backup tackle for 100 years, and Kristen Gaylord's a kid that was an incredible run blocker. You have Cole Conrad that has played tackle as well. So you have options. Do you have options that are as athletic and skilled as Nick Gates? Probably not, but you'll be able to make do. And it comes down to attitude. Is did you get what you wanted? And this isn't all on Gates, but as a whole, did you get what you wanted out of your offensive line last year? And the answer is no in the run game. Was it all on Nick Gates? No. Could Nick Gates have played better football? Probably. Could the team have been better? Yeah. You just wonder from a culture standpoint in fit if Gates was going to buy in or had some trepidation about buy-in, and it was just easier to move on. How big a loss is it? Well, 35 starts, 26 consecutive starts, and with what this offense is going to try to be, you want a guy like him on the offensive line, you want a guy like him and his athleticism, and it just didn't end well for Nick Gates. 4-8. The bowl loss a year ago. The next question is who else is gone? You've lost Tanner Lee. You've lost Nick Gates. What's Stanley do? What's your quarterback room going to look like? Nebraska's offered another quarterback we'll get to here in a minute for 2018. Colton, you're a... Your takeaway here on Gates is I'm going to cough my head off here in a second. But you have more of a positive remembrance of Gates as he moves on?
You want to hope. You remember the positives, right? You don't want to, you know, sit back on the negatives. You want to hope and wish him the best in everything he wants to do. And I do wish him luck in the NFL, but maybe he could have gotten a lot of help from getting one more year, maybe in this offense.
And one more year under a new guy. And right. I mean, Kavanaugh's MO was always like pass protection, right? Yeah. But and Gates with that football focus always graded out well, too, in the run game. Mm-hmm. So I don't think Nick Gates had bad years, but I just don't think anything ever equaled his first year.
Yeah, no, there were definitely times where he just didn't quite get to where his potential, I think, was. I think there was that ability he had, but they threw him so much, like you said, in the pass protection, which you need in the NFL, but, you know,
he just had some flat-out tough games, yeah, too, towards the end of the year.
Yeah, it just was rough for him sometimes, and, you know, hopefully it translates to the NFL, and hopefully that works out for him.
Here's the recruiting update. Greg Smith all over this, HailVarsity.com. Today, Nebraska making another offer. It's a quarterback. It's a three-star Matthew Tago, 6'3", 225 guy. Might be a linebacker, but Nebraska interested in him as a quarterback. He's a former UCLA guy. So where's Nebraska's room at with the quarterback? And a second quarterback option at 18, not necessarily a bad thing if the evaluations match up. We'll have some more on that. We'll wind down to Tuesday as Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Every year, thousands of Nebraskans are injured or killed in car crashes on our roads. Almost
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time on a Tuesday, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Tomorrow, Brad Edwards will talk national title game with us and his thoughts on Scott Frost. We are out to a couple of folks. Nebraska Northwestern, a big ball game tonight. The tip's at 8 on BT. Had a chance for Coach Miles and company to move to 2-1 or go the other way, but a pivotal early Big Ten tilt. We'll see what else is shaken tomorrow with a couple of special names. We are out to, I want to remind you about just what a year 2017 has been and 2018 will be when it comes to the best in your hands in the form of Hail Varsity and those amazing Husker photos, be it the volleyball championships, be it Scott Frost and his announcement, or just daily game coverage in Hail Varsity Magazine or .com. And the folks that make it look great, yes, Aaron Babcock, but your friends at Rockbrook Camera. And they fill all of Hail Varsity's photography need and the trust in Rockbrook by Hail Varsity and the Sony products they offer. Sony's mirrorless imaging technology achieves a new dimension in photographic speed and performance in cameras, and they're a fraction of the size and weight of traditional digital SLR cameras. So you got a nephew, you got a son or daughter that plays sports. Do you just want to be an outdoors person that likes to get a great shot of nature, or you like taking sports photos? Trust Rockbrook Camera and go visit your friends at Rockbrook Camera with 3 area locations, and can go online, rockbrookcamera.com. Okay, so you have Nebraska hoops, you have Nick Gates off to the NFL, you have Central Florida and a wanted title shot, and you have the playoff selection committee, man. Say, no, we didn't tell you to leave. We didn't send security in to have you removed. We just told you have to be this tall to ride the ride. Well, we're taller than that bar, undefeated, beating Auburn. We'll see if this is just a momentary grumble or things get moving. Ultimately, I commend Central Florida, Scott Frost, his staff for not just winning, not just going undefeated, not just multitasking, but I'm going to go back to poise and confidence and preparation. In a game that big, you're super confident. And the kids were confident. And when they were nervous, as Coach McBride said, the old stage fright, and it's true. You remember having stage fright at some point in your life in a big moment. How do you overcome it and then find a way to get something accomplished? Well, Central Florida did. And they leaned on Milton's legs when the arm wasn't working. And then they let his arm do the finishing touch to get it won. And there was no holdup, no stoppage in aggressiveness, not being foolish, but no lack of get after the quarterback. I loved it. Central Florida's anointed by a lot of college football today. Oklahoma is pointed at, and people are shaking their head. Two big time differences there. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 4 on Hail Varsity. Thanks.